John Updike is best known for his novels, short stories, and book reviews, but he says his youthful museum visits, pious, joyful, and ignorant, inspired a love and nurtured a strange confidence that has emboldened him from time to time to write on the visual arts. His art essays from the 1980s are collected in a new book called Just Looking. Updike told me more about why he likes to write about art.
I like to write about it because I once was an art student of a sort, and once indeed was an aspiring young artist from about the age of four or so. I thought I wanted to be a cartoonist or a work for Disney, an animator, all those things. Then a New Yorker cartoonist as I matured. So I really gave up the artistic ambition fairly late in life. I must have been in my 20s before I realized that a writer was what I seemed to be.
What's the difference between how you write about literature and how you write about art?
Well,
you personally, and what you're looking for, and what you're trying to bring to it.
I suppose in art, the pleasure or lack of it is instantaneous, and you're not dealing with the dimension of time. You can therefore see a great many works simultaneously, and in a way, you're writing about the artist rather than about the individual works. In other words, a room full or several rooms full gives you a feeling of the painter. When you're writing about a book, unless you want to make a real extensive review of it, you're basically dealing with that particular book, and the author may have a lot of arrows that you haven't seen shot, but you deal with the book. In both departments, I may be exceptionally aware of the visual and perhaps improperly grateful for realism. That is, in painting, I like it when I can see what's going on and get a sort of shock of recognition, and in writing also.
When you're writing about literature, you're writing about a form that you're very accomplished in. When you're writing about painting, you're writing about a form that you were once very serious about doing yourself, but that you kind of gave up. Does that make you feel more uncomfortable about writing about painting? I'm not saying that it should. I mean, most critics don't... Most music critics don't play, most literary critics don't write novels, and that seems perfectly fine to me, but I wonder if you feel differently about it.
Well, when I'm reviewing a novel, having written a few myself, I suppose I can take a kind of insider-ish tone, and in fact do know a little something about the mental mechanics of writing fiction. And also I know a little bit about the contemporary modes, the experiments that are going on, and the hidden crises in the art form. In painting, I'm relatively innocent of all this and no doubt lose out in the knowledgeability department. But I think I gained to a certain extent in the innocent department that I really am enchanted often by paintings and by sculptures. I'm enchanted that people do this, that they make a living of it, some of them. I like museum spaces. I like even the guards and the restrooms. So maybe a more boyish, fresher critic is at work when I'm talking about the visual arts.
What do you like about museum restrooms?
Well, they're generally rather big and ample and not very heavily patronized, so you don't feel crowded in them. And they also, in some dim way, try to reflect the overall artistic mode of the museum itself. So those at the Museum of Modern Art have a certain chaste severity. Those at the Metropolitan have a kind of harking back to the Gilded Age.
Tell us how you started going to museums.
Well, my mother used to take me to the local one in Reading, PA, which is outside of Philadelphia, maybe 50 miles, and it has a rather impressive structure. The art inside it is not so impressive, and the first floor was mostly given over to things like mummies and small models of Eskimos dragging ice to the snow. To a child, quite fascinating. And upstairs, there was some local art and a few Pennsylvania Dutch chests and so on. At any rate, the enchantment of the museum itself, and maybe of the trip with my mother and the quiet of it all, the relative desertion, made more of an impact than the individual works in it.
When you were young and going to museums, did you seek out the nudes to learn a little bit more about adult anatomy?
Well, you know, I think I must have, and I noticed in assembling my book when it was all done and finished and presented it to me, there do seem to be an exceptional number of nudes in it. So, yeah, I'm not sure if this was just the child in me, but might have been the man as well. The Reading Museum had a number of small nude statues, or nearly nude. Indians were a favored theme with a lot of American artists from the turn of the century. So there are a number of nearly naked Indians sitting on horseback or pulling a bow and arrow, as well as a few nymphs and satyrs. And the nudity of these small creatures, they're all maybe 2 feet high, did deliver a message I wasn't quite prepared to receive, but a very, very powerful one. I suppose it is true that museums are a place where the innocent and the curious encounter depictions of the nude for the first time. And it's always been a problem with art. The Victorians had an awful wrestle with it. On the one hand, they were wrapping up real women in all this cloth and corsets and whalebone. And on the other hand, there was a place for the nude figure in art, and it appears in lamps and wallpaper and chairs, and it's kind of both everywhere and nowhere.
I'm going to ask you to read an excerpt of one of the pieces in your new book, Just Looking, and this is called A Case of Solicitude, and it's about looking at a nude. It's about a nude, the reclining nude by Modigliani.
Reclining nude, or Le Grand Nu, is the largest of the series of nudes Amedeo Modigliani painted between 1916 and 1919. It hangs in the expanded Museum of Modern Art, next to the exit from a heavily trafficked room, in a position so exposed and vulnerable that I once wrote a letter to the director of the museum about it, expressing my anxiety that someone, in a world where hatred of beautiful things always lurks, would take the moment needed to slash this gorgeous canvas with a knife or scribble over it with a magic marker. The director, an old college classmate of mine, ignored my letter, and the painting remains next to the doorway and has not yet been harmed. Modigliani's paintings, having already survived the wreck of their creator's violent, alcohol-soaked life, are perhaps tougher than I solicitously imagine.
I'm wondering if it was almost a case of chivalry that got you to be so concerned about the about protecting this painting of the female nude. Would you have felt that way if it wasn't a painting of a naked woman?
If it was a male nude?
Yeah, if it was a male nude or just a beautiful still life?
I think so. I think I was clearly imagining that was a real woman there who, in some chivalrous way, I wanted to protect. You know, there have been these cases of museum mutilation, and not so many in America, but a number in Europe. It does worry me a bit that a madman in a museum might do quite a lot of damage very quickly. There's that scene in Batman, of course, in which the Joker does do just that, and it's true enough. On the one hand, you wish to expose these things to public viewing, and on the other hand, you wish to protect them for the next centuries. So it's a bit of a bind.
Mm-hmm. When you see something you love, a painting or a sculpture, do you have the impulse to own it, like, if only I could afford it? Or does it not matter to you whether you own it and can live with it or not?
I think it's a good way to go to an art show, in a way, is to ask yourself if you would like to own this or that thing. And, of course, you do want to own the very precious ones, the very choice ones. Most paintings don't reach out saying, buy me. And of course, you can't buy, but a few, yes, I think you could happily live with. I find even in the paintings I do possess that they change, or your perception of them changes, so that a good painting is never the same thing twice, and you keep seeing new things in it or new feelings about it emerge.
You wrote that as a young man you went to museums looking for a religion. And that you were attracted to artists who seemed as single-minded as saints. Did art succeed in filling that need for you, or did you give up on trying to have it filled?
No, I've not given up on having it filled, and I'll try a variety of things to keep it filled, including going to church. But certainly my practice of art is the one thing about my life that always gives me satisfaction and a kind of center. Good or bad, the attempt to create something that hasn't been done before seems to me, you know, intrinsically worthy and noble. It's a kind of homage to the world that you want to make, to add to it in this artistic way. So, no, I wouldn't say it was a failed search at all. The Museum of Modern Art, and any museum, in fact, offers you more instant access to the artistic flame. Literature demands that you read. It demands time. There are always masterpieces you have never gotten to. Just to keep up at all with contemporary writing is an enormous task, whereas all this happens a lot quicker with art. And so, in a way, the flame burns brighter there for me in a museum. But I was able to take the courage it gave me, I hope, and apply it to my own work.
Okay, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Oh, thank you.